The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Love that music from my good friend in D.C., Sekele. Thank you, Sekele, for that lovely tune. That's just moving, motivating, inspiring tune. Just gives me energy. That's why I love to hear it. And we're here at the Lotus Place Radio. Welcome in. What is today? What is it? It's Wednesday. March the 30th, 2016. Welcome in. And we are here with part two of our tribute to African women. So if you listened in on Sunday or if you missed Sunday, you can always go back and have a listen. We honored some of our great sisters, contemporary, and some of our ancestors, recent ancestors, and our just powerful, lovely warrior sisters. So tonight we will continue, because of course we could go on and on saluting our lovely sisters for National Women's History Month. And we can also salute so many wonderful brothers as well. Never discounting our brothers. But it's National Women's History Month, so we are talking about women, women power, black girls rock. And so tonight we will hear some clips from another one of my favorites, and I believe King B's favorite as well, Queen Mother Moore. I would love to share this clip. She speaks on reparations, and she speaks on how she met Garvey. So we will listen to a clip from Queen Mother Moore. But before we do that, let me give you the number so that you can call in and share your comments with us here at the Lotus Place Radio, your thoughts, or if you have a Queen Mother in your life that you would like to highlight. And your Queen Mother could be auntie next door, your grandmother, your mother, your sister, your sister friend, an auntie in the community, a mother, queen mother in the community. Let's highlight these sisters. Call in 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032, press pound. And if you would like to speak and share your comment or honor the woman that you would like to recognize tonight, just press star 61. All right, so let's see. Let me share a clip. And Mother Emanina Feather Light will be on with a quote for us shortly. But until then, let's see. Let me see which one of these that we will kick off. Oh, you know, I always love to hear one of my absolute favorites, Nina Simone, but tonight we will also hear a clip from one of my absolute favorites. I know I always say my absolute favorite, because they are, all of them are, Winnie Mandela. So let's see, I'm looking for my clip. I'm looking for my clip and I don't see it. Just hold on. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, well, let's just go into a Queen Mother Moore clip. That would be quite appropriate. Queen Mother Moore. I believe Queen Mother Moore was born in Louisiana. And she followed Garvey up to New York. So Queen Mother Moore on reparations.
Some people throughout the world. Her name is Queen Mother Moore. Welcome, Queen Mother.
Thank you.
How did you become known as Queen Mother Moore?
Well, that name was bestowed upon me by the African students, first of all, as a result of my years of activities in this country. They gave it to me. When I went to Africa, to Dr. Nkrumah's funeral, the chief heard about me, and he sent for me to come to him. And I went, and he said, "I'm going to make you officially Queen Mother of the Ashanti." And he initiated me Queen Mother. But I was Queen Mother before I went to Africa.
Did you personally know?
And that was Queen Mother Moore. Let's welcome in another Queen Mother, two Queen Mothers, Zola, Featherlight, and is this, let's see.
Namaste.
Namaste, yes. Namaste to you. How are you?
How are you, Black Rose? How are you tonight?
Wonderful.
This lovely, lovely night.
Yes. This lovely Wednesday night. We're talking women on Wednesday. That was Queen Mother Moore. She said she was already Queen Mother Moore.
Hello.
She said,
hello. I thought you knew.
Queen Mother.
I thought you knew.
She said, thank you. Thank you so much for that honor. But,
yes.
Already Queen Mother.
Look, just a minor.
Just a minor. You're not the first one to bestow this title upon me. So welcome in, Feather. Do you have a quote for us? How are you, first?
Yes.
How are you? You doing okay?
Am spectacular. Spectacular.
Spectacular. Okay, I'll have to plagiarize you on that one.
It is free to anyone. Here is my quote for today. Prayer is sending requests and gratitude up. Meditation is being quiet and listening for the answers. If you are always talking, how can you listen? If your mind is constantly processing, worrying, anxious, creating false realities, how can you hear what you need to know? Quiet your mind, go in nature, and listen for a change. That is my quote for today.
I love that because it's like, I know for myself, like once I wake up, sometimes throughout that day, I am just going.
Yeah.
And so if you are going to go like that, it is so helpful when you get up and you do kind of take some time to just think or listen.
Right.
Better yet, listen.
Listen.
Listen. Listen first and then think. So I'm always thinking, and I need to listen more. I need to listen.
Oh, definitely.
Because what we ask for, the questions that we ask, worries, people call them worries or things like that, troubles. Mm-hmm. But just questions or things, concerns or issues that we're trying to work out, when we really ask for the help, and then you just, like people say, just give it away to God, or just put it out there to the universe. Just put it out there. Say it, pray about it, whatever, however you want to
whatever you want to call it. But once you do that and release it and you let it go, and things will work out. You still have to work your plan, but just be faithful. Just be, just know, be confirmed that it's done and it's going to happen. Whatever it is, whatever you need, it's all going to work out. You'll have it. The best outcome will produce itself.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in, as you said, from that step, throw it out to the universe, you know, put it at the altar, you know, lay it in his hands.
Whatever you want to call it.
But have some kind of visualization of what you want to happen. And go about taking those steps.
That's the key
to
word,
make it happen.
Keyword.
Yes, not just kind of like, you know, just sit and do nothing.
Right.
And say things are just going to happen whether I move from this spot or not. It's not going to be that way. Mm-hmm. You know, use visualization as to what it is that you're trying to get to, you know. And this is powerful because it is energy. It is energy. We are where we place our energy. That's where we are. That's where we are. So I can really attest to that in many, many ways. I would like to share tonight. It is within. It is within. That is so important, what you have within. And too often we go outside to seek answers. So that's what this title is about this evening, and it is called It Is Within. Okay, so two parts actually. So there are over 200 creation stories all over the world. You are familiar with creation stories, Black Rose?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so
there's various creation stories based on your culture, what part of the world and time of the world. Time you came into the world and all of that.
Right. So, I was very, very grown before I realized that everyone didn't have the same creation story. Of Adam and Eve, right? I mean, I thought everybody believed that. You know,
yeah.
I felt that this was the way things were, and as I, you know, became familiar with more cultures, then I read more. So the Adam and Eve story is like 2,000 years old, according to the Bible. And the fossils or bones of the African woman that were found in Ethiopia, pen named Lucy, by the founders, shows that she walked the earth 3.2 million years ago. So someone was actually here before Adam and Eve. So that's a fact. And guess what? The bones were found by Europeans. You know how some people sadly say they feel that white people's water is colder, and so some people don't believe something unless it's white people say it. So this was found by some anthropologists. That's your area, isn't it? Black Rose, anthropologist. So Richard Leakey, and he came to the University of Memphis about 10, 12 years ago, and I went to see him. Heard about his story of how he found these bones of this African woman that shows that there were people living 3.2 million years ago, and it was the fossils of a Black woman. So this is a creation story that I found in a book that I have called Soul Stories by Gary Zukav, who's a spiritual teacher. He's well renowned, and he's had 4 consecutive books on the bestseller list. Appeared on Oprah Winfrey Show several times, all that. But more importantly, his book changed the way that I view the world. Back in September of 2000, long before he appeared on TV, I read Seed of the Soul. And then I read Soul Stories. And then I also have The Heart of the Soul, you know, which talks about emotional awareness. And other books, The Dancing Wu-Ling Masters, which talks about quantum physics. So this creation story I'm about to share with you was in one of his books. called Soul Stories. And by the way, this is also was my first introduction to the terms Earth Suit, which is like your body, and Earth School, which is it refers to we all come here to learn. So I started using these terms back in 2002, but I was, you know, on the deep end. But since then, I've given copies of these books to my daughter and as well as my friends. So there's a little background on this story, where it came from. There's a story of when the Creator was talking to the creatures about the humans, and the Creator said, they're going to need some help, as they will face many crises while on Earth. They won't remember on their own where to find the guidance and protection that they need. But I don't want to make it easy for them. Where can I hide it? All the creatures had different answers. None seemed suitable. The dolphin and other sea creatures said, hide it in the sea. They'd have to dive deep to find it. And the eagle and some of the birds suggested hiding it in the clouds. They'd have to soar really high to find it. And none of these seemed to suit the Creator. Finally, Mother Mole, wise in her age and experience, said, simple, hide it where many will not bother to look. Hide it deep within them. The Creator paused, and he clapped. That's it. And all the creatures bowed down in agreement, and it was so. The answers are all within. There's no book greater than the one you possess inside of you. Study it daily. The Bible may tell you how to live using parables and psalms and stories, but no external book can explain why you do what you do, why you act and feel the way you do, why you seem to have difficulty expressing your sexual desires, why holding on to money eludes you, why you keep choosing partners who make you unhappy, or why you care so much about what people think, why you try to please others but end up feeling drained and unfilled yourself.
Oh, goodness.
Why you ache most of the time and the doctor has no answers. Emotional issues can cause physical pain. You have the most important book in the world right inside you. Whenever you're ready to open it, you are God. We tried the nonviolent black and white hands walking together peace approach of Martin Luther King. We tried the arm and protect yourself with guns from the Black Panthers' perspective. We even tried to just leave and go back to the motherland with Marcus Garvey. Go home, go back where you came from, they said. Many would turn off with the by any means necessary stance with Malcolm X. They were all either murdered or ruined. We even tried separating ourselves, building our own town, having our own businesses, trading with one another, thriving, doing well with Rosewood, Tulsa's Black Wall Street. That didn't last. Somebody tripped in an elevator and boom, it's all over. And then there was the Detroit riot of 1943, 34 people killed, 435 people injured, because the whites didn't want to work next to blacks in the auto factories, and they walked off the job. Now it's time for something different. It's a game changer. We pray and plead to our gods and ask, why are we left unprotected against this daily attack, hunted, terrorized, victimized, and marginalized by those who hate us? What have we done to endure senses of such malice? Oh, but the answer is not what have we done, but it's what we have not done. Your God gave you what you needed to shield yourself. You have not looked within. There you will find what you need, all you need. The answer is within. You are God's. John 10:34, King James Version. Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, the Bible, I said, ye are gods, quote unquote. 1 Corinthians 3:16, King James Version, know ye not that ye are the temple, your body, of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you, quote unquote. Okay, wait, one more. Psalm 82:6, King James Version, his favorite. I have said, and I'm going to tell you one more time, people, ye are gods. Run with it. The shepherd over the congregation never quotes these scriptures. Why? Ask yourself, why? Why was it put there? Is it not the word? Know thyself. You have the key. All you have to do is turn it. Three words, melanin, energy, light. That is how we arm ourselves. Know how they work for you. People of Africa and of African descent are the most melanin dominant people on beings on the planet. This powerful life-sustaining molecule is produced in every living creature on this planet, including plants, fish, etc. They all possess melanin in order to live. And it is the most dominant in you. What do you think that means? It comes with huge fringe benefits. Lots of them. Know what your enemy already knows about you. And that is why they have melanin conferences every few years. And no black scientists, researchers, etc. are invited. They want to stay three steps ahead to consistently and effectively disarm our melanin. And that is their goal. And we can change that simply by knowing what they know about ourselves, knowing where their answers lie. We're in the middle of a war, and we have the most powerful weapon locked away in the closet, in your mind, in your temple. Turn the key. Learn how to use your gifts to change your life. Lastly, if I am given weapons to protect myself against someone or something whose ultimate goal is to eradicate my existence, my children's existence, I want to use those weapons to protect myself, protect the generations that follow me. We're given tickets for this train of life. It's time we pulled ours out and used them for the game changer. There's a transformation in humans happening right now. It's not coming, it's here. Consciousness is central to everything. And once we as descendants of the motherland create our collective consciousness, there will be a new day. And this frightens the hell out of some people. So tune in Sunday and we will talk about Melanin and Me, the first of three series, so that we can arm ourselves. You may be surprised what you'll hear. Namaste, and spark the brain of someone who may change the world.
Oh my goodness. I am just totally inspired. You had me just leaning over, just listening. Like, I'm like, hold on. I was like all into it. I couldn't even do anything else. I couldn't even concentrate on the other things I'm normally trying to do. Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. And, you know, I tell you, somebody else is on the line that loves to spark minds, and that's Brother Brown. I think Brother Brown.
Oh, yeah.
How you doing? I was just listening to it. You know, I have to say that that's one of the most prolific explanations of melanin that I've heard in quite a while. And I also want to say that, to add to what Sister Asia said, you know, they have put melanin on the stock market. They have tried, they are extracting melanin, and I don't know how they have it labeled on the stock market, but
right.
they have a company. Like I said, when they do these things, there are no African people around. Okay.
Nope.
And this is by design, people. Come on now, we gotta get, after all these years, we have to get with our ancestors' program. They cannot continue to pour out their wisdom and knowledge and the scholarly works of those who have passed on before us they are not going to continue to give us this information if we're not going to use it.
If we're not going to use it. We've got to use it. We have it. We have it.
We already got the keys. When Donna Wilson wrote her book, Keys to the Colors, she exposed everything about white supremacy. And she kept it going until she made her transition. She didn't do that. I mean, when people dedicate their lives, like J.A. Rogers, spent 65 years of his life before he even had a personal relationship with a woman, to research things all across the globe for the benefit of black people. And now we got this idiot, Tim Wise, running around here telling black people, I mean, just like a Pied Piper, you know. And I'm not against Bernie Sanders, and I'm going to add this in there. I'm not against Bernie Sanders. But we in the African community have to be very, very aware of wolves in sheep's clothing, knowing that if we had a black president, a so-called black president in the White House for 8 years, and we had no substantial gains in 8 years. What the hell we think?
Right, exactly.
Yes. 8 years. Not just four, 8.
Every law that was passed, it was either a feminist law or LGBT law or a law that promulgated white supremacy. Nothing in the world that he do to have an inkling of effect on black America. Nothing.
No.
As a matter of fact, while he was in office, he made it harder for black kids to get student loans at HBCUs because he made it mandatory that their parents had to have a 5-year credit check.
I didn't know about that. I didn't either.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's right. Check it out. They made it so if my daughter or my son want to go to school and we want to go and borrow some money. Oh yeah, they go
Mother
back
Hattie,
5 years on.
Mother Hattie's on the line. Have you heard of that, Mother Hattie? Come off of mute. Well, go ahead, Brother Brown.
Yeah, they go back and they check your credit.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but
yeah, and when I found that out, because I was in Baltimore when I found it out, and I was talking to a friend of mine. He used to do a program. He had a radio program at Morgan State for like 10 years, you know. And he said he stepped down because he needed a break. But he was the one that informed me. He said, you know, while this fool was in the White House, he said, you know what he did. He made it harder. And then I checked it out. And I said, well, my God. I said, man, here he is going. A lot of these people, when their kids apply for these loans and stuff like that, they go back and check their credit. If your parents got bad credit, you can't get no loan.
Oh, well, yeah. So if the parent has, okay, now I know what you mean. Okay. So if the parent has to, yes, right. So now they're having the parents apply for the loan for the child, right. So, yeah, they
like
will.
Like a co-signer, right.
They will have to go through a credit check, yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, but, I mean, but that's...
But see, back
that's just
years ago, that was not...
In the loan.
But see, but years ago, that was not part of the credit check.
The parent having to apply for the... But you know what? Now, that's one thing that I can extrapolate from what's her name, the Green Party candidate, what's her name, Stein or something, I think Stein. She's speaking for eradicating student loan debt immediately. And see, that's what they need to do. Is too many students, young people, people that went back to school, coming out of school, trying to better yourself and educate yourself like they tell you to. And then you have to, come out, you know, an average of $50,000 in debt. And my student loan debt is over that amount.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, God forbid you go for advanced degrees. And, oh, my God,
right.
What? It's ridiculous.
I'm gonna tell you something else they did. When they had that war, you know, that Bosnia war during the Clinton administration, they had I don't know how many students to come over here. And part of the agreement with them students coming over here was that these kids that came over here from Survey Hall and places like that, they came over here, they had no student debt.
They gave them free
tuition.
Well, I mean, see, that's one thing that Gaddafi used to offer for his people when they came over to any other country to attend any institution. He also gave the family a stipend. So he paid for the tuition, paid for their room and board, books, everything. And if I wanted to have my cousin come over to keep me company while I'm studying to be a doctor in the United States or Cuba, then she can come too.
But we
have to go into hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And it's not make any sense.
And the thing about this is that when these students, because I had some in my classroom, that's how I found out.
And Brother Brown, you know, hold on just a second. Hold that story until we come right back from the break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Lotus Plate. Let's take a quick break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Throughout the world. Her name is Queen Mother Moore. Welcome, Queen Mother.
Thank you.
How did you become known as Queen Mother Moore?
Well, that name was bestowed upon me by the African students, first of all, as a result of my years of activities in this country. They gave it to me. When I went to Africa, to Dr. Nkrumah's funeral, the chief heard about me, and he sent for me to come to him. And I went, and he said, I'm going to make you officially Queen Mother of the Ashanti. And he initiated me Queen Mother. But I was Queen Mother before I went to Africa.
Did you personally know the late Kwame Nkrumah?
Yes, I did. I knew him here.
Okay, you met him while he was visiting here?
Yes.
Okay, and that is in conjunction with your work?
Yes.
I understand that you sent a petition to the United Nations in, I think, 1957 for reparations for the black people in America. Explain something about that to us.
Yes, the petition called for us to go back to Africa, for those who wanted to go back. And for those who wanted to stay here, there had to be certain indemnity given for the people who wanted to stay, the people who wanted to go.
What kind of indemnity?
Well, I was asking for $200
billion. $200
billion dollars
to indemnify?
Yes, for the injury that we have received. The injury as a result of our enslavement.
Okay, that's for our 400 years of enslavement.
Yes.
As reparations, we requested $200 billion.
Yes.
Okay, when you sent this petition to the United Nations, what kind of response did you get?
I got a very good response, and he told me that we needed a member nation to introduce the resolution, since we were not officially members of the UN.
Is this with the your work with the Republic of New Africa?
No, that was not. I was a member of the Ethiopian Women, the Universal Association of Ethiopian Women.
I understand that you founded that organization.
Yes.
And what was that organization about?
To save our men from execution. They were being executed at the rate of 2 a week almost. There was somebody being executed.
Then unjustly executed?
Yes, we thought they were unjustly executed. And we tried to save some of them. We did save some.
Mention a few.
From execution. Rabat and Porret. We saved those. We saved Jenkins. We saved another brother.
There was a number of people that were saved from execution because they were unjustly charged with crimes.
Yes.
And where did this take place?
In New Orleans.
Okay, you're from New Orleans,
yes.
I understand. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you also worked with Marcus Garvey.
Yes.
Tell us first something about Marcus Garvey.
Well, I was first brought into the Marcus Garvey movement by the fact that I understood that he was to come and speak to us in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the meeting, and lo and behold, he didn't come. And we heard that the mayor refused to allow him to come. So we were very incensed about it and got a delegation to go see why. And then it was guaranteed that Marcus Garvey would come the next night. The hall was packed with people, and everybody went with ammunition.
They had guns?
They had guns. Everybody had guns. Blue Steel, Smith & Wesson's, German Lugers. They had plenty of German Lugers because, you know, the war had boys from the war and everything.
Okay.
And I had 2 guns with me. And they all had guns and ammunition, a bag of ammunition. Everybody had what you call a suitcase today.
And now, okay, and we are back here at the Lotus Place. That was Queen Mother Moore speaking. I love Queen Mother Moore. Thank you, Feather. I love Queen Mother Moore. Queen Mother Moore said she had 2 guns, and there were plenty of guns. bags of
ammunition.
Okay, they were ready. See, that's what I'm talking about. They were ready. So, welcome in. Welcome back to the Lotus Place here on this Wednesday night. We are talking about part 2 of our African women from antiquity to contemporary to present. Some of our warrior sisters like Harriet Tubman or Queen Mother Moore, Ida B. Wells, Winnie Mandela, Feather Light over there, Dorothy, Mother Hattie. Our great ancestors, my grandmother, your auntie, my auntie.
Yeah.
Yes, those strong women that have had an influence on your life or community in some kind of way. So share a quote with us. You have another quote, Zola?
Yes, I certainly do.
Okay.
Let's see, here's one for you. Don't promise when you're happy. Don't reply. Yes. Don't reply when you're angry. Don't decide when you're sad. Now, How do you relate to that? Why do you think that is? Why wouldn't you want to promise something when you're happy?
Why wouldn't you want to promise something? Because you may overpromise. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Yeah, you may maybe you overpromise. Is that it? Brother Brown, what do you think? Delta's on the line.
Yeah, I think.
Hi, Delta.
You. I think you would say something that you'd be real hyped up, and you would say something you don't really mean when you really, really
right. Happy. Yeah. Yeah. You're just so happy, and the world is wonderful, and I love that ant crawling over there, and just everything looks like rosy, and of course I'll do that for you. Yes. Yes. What else you want me to do?
That's exactly what I'm telling people that they want to hear. You know, he's given us a dream, because we're looking at between the devil and the deep blue sea. We're looking at the Republican Party and Hillary Clinton. And then we're saying that, you know, everybody got this negative element about Hillary Clinton. But my thing is this: why aren't we trying to find solutions and not depending on somebody who's going to sit in the White House? See, none of them have worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
None of them. And after all of these years of voting, when are we going to understand that that is not an agenda for Black America?
Some of us are coming around. Some of us are coming around.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, some of us are coming around. This is a new day. It's a new consciousness that's taking on. And trust me, we are aware that this hadn't worked. Something wrong with that. It's not working. Stop walking down the same street, stepping in the same hole, looking around all confused, wondering how you got in this hole, fussing that you're in this hole, fussing as you climb out of the hole, and then you do the same thing the next day. No, we will not do that. We will not do that. Don't reply when you're angry. Why would you not want to reply when you're angry?
Because you'll say something that you don't mean, and because you're really, really angry at the time, and you want to hurt that person that said something, and you just want to strike back at him, but you don't really mean it. And so it's best to keep silent, because when you say something out of anger, you don't mean it. It's just like when you're in a fight and you're having a situation when someone gets killed. At that time, you're so angry with that person, you'll do something and you don't really mean to do it. But after you have cooled down and thought about it, after the person is dead, you didn't even really want to know. This is true. Think about it. You can do something when you ever seen a person do something
Oh, yeah.
And they don't really mean it. You ever seen a person take somebody and run them down in a car or something? And no, but it's true. At the time, think about it. I'm just giving you a situation.
Yeah, it happened because Frankie Ray over there at, what's the name of that church? New Salem Baptist Church in Memphis. He ran over his wife because, what happened? I think she took his Bentley, so he tried to run over her in the Bentley or whatever, some stupid stuff. But anyway,
yeah, you can get so angry and you don't mean it, and you'll do something again after you sit down and cool off and think about it. Then you'll say, oh my God, I wish I hadn't done this.
Right. But you know what,
Dr. Cougar, on the flip side of that is that you may say something that you really do mean, because sometimes people really do mean these things they're saying, but they have said it. They should not have said it. And then anger is really kind of based on something that really is bothering you, that doesn't even have anything to do with the present situation. You're bringing up, that has touched a button that's way back somewhere, and it's reminding you of that feeling that you had when that happened, and then you're going to take it out on that person that's standing right in front of you. And you probably will say some things that, you know, you really mean. You know, I hate when you wear your hair like that. It just cringes. I cringe when you clear your throat like that, and really that's how you feel. But you really shouldn't have said that, you know. So, yes, when you're angry, it is best to let the feeling go, like you're sitting on the banks of the river and you're looking at this emotion called anger, and you just can't, you know, you're looking at it and just let it go right on through. You don't shut the door in its face, because when you don't release your feelings, then they will pop out at the most inopportune time. So let it out. Let it go, not in anger, not in talking, not in replying, but just watch it go by. And realize that that is a feeling that you're having, and then realize too, why am I angry about that? Why did what she say make me angry? Why did what he say make me angry in the first place? And then kind of revisit your own issues.
Well, I have a question for you. So based on that, I'm thinking, because I know you've seen in like some scenes from different movies, like when a couple is having an argument and then the man wants to walk out and leave. Mm-hmm. So should the woman just, or the man, just let that person mm-hmm. go and have a moment so that mm-hmm. harsh words will not be exchanged?
There's two sides to that. There's mm-hmm. two sides to that. I would hate for a person to leave in anger and then jump behind, a car, the wheel of a car, because you're not seeing straight, you're not thinking straight, your mind mm-hmm. is traveling real fast, and when your mind mm-hmm. is traveling real fast, it makes your body go real fast. So mm-hmm. that's the only problem I have with that. If I felt that the person wanted to leave, and really I'm sort of like the cool head of any type of relationship. I can, you know, keep my head cool. When I explode, it's like it's too late, you know. So I would say, you know, no, don't you leave. I'll leave. You know, I'll leave. Because I feel like I would be able to control myself, either just go hide somewhere, you know. But I would hate for a person to leave in anger and then there'd be an accident. Blah, 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 blah. But yeah, let them go. I don't think that you should should force a person, if a person feels like they got to take a break, mm-hmm. you know, from an argument, then let them take a break. Mm-hmm. So they may say something they shouldn't have said, and you cannot ever untake words. You cannot ever take them back and roll them up and shove them back down your throat. They're out.
Once they're out, they're out.
They're out.
You can apologize. Well,
but it's just don't make. Mm-mm. Hmm. That's you know, a person will say, I didn't know you felt like
just
that.
Breathing.
I didn't mean it. I don't know, somebody's taking deep conscious breathing classes on the phone.
Speaking of which, you said you want to start having the yoga breathing session, so we're not starting it right now. I think that's Brother Brown.
Yeah, I apologize.
You're taking a deep breathing session. So listen. So we want to get into our topic for tonight. Saluting and highlighting women, the accomplishments and achievements and the significance of women. Because Aja, we were talking about this the other day. Like all of the many, we just thought of the top three that we could think of right then and there, issues and things that women, African women, Black women, that we have to deal with daily, that we're assaulted with, is the hair, the whole hair issue. Thank goodness more and more Black women are beginning to just say, okay, you know, I'm just going to wear my hair how it is, and it is what it is. And some women want to, but they can't for whatever reason, because it's just so many things. And then it's the hair issue, it's the weight issue, and then the whole colorism issue. So all of these issues just compounded on us and just
taken us through so many changes, and you really have to have, I would say, a strong circle of people that can give you that support and encouragement, what would you say, Aja or Delta, or even Brother Brown, as being a man being around women, because you have...
Before you do anything else, as I say, love yourself 100%, because it starts from there. If you're not loving yourself 100%, somebody could chip away with you just like that. And the least little thing that they say, then if you feel attacked by it, you feel like you got to be defensive about it. Someone could say to me, you know, you kind of nice looking for a dark older woman, you know, mm-hmm. and I could get offensive about it, you know, take offense to it, like, huffy puffy and stuff. But if I'm confident in myself, you know, and I feel really, really good about myself and all of this, get it all, you know, love for myself, true love for myself, then I would not take it personal. I would say that person has an issue. You know, he still hasn't accepted certain things. And then let that go on, you know, with that person. That's that person energy. But we, as black women, we have been attacked by so many different people. You know, even some of our own black brothers, you know, will put on the Facebook, I don't like black women. You know, black women is black women that, you know. Thankfully, I mean, we see some brothers that come out and say, if you don't like black women, you need to go on. I'm like, yes, get rid of them. But then you got the white man trying to bring the black woman down. You got we have each other, you know, bringing each other down. It's much more difficult for us to have true love for ourselves. But we have got to focus back on that. Like Beyonce say, we got to get information, and it starts with loving ourselves. And no, the first being that was found on this planet, I just said, was a black woman in Ethiopia over 3 million years ago. Woman, not man, not from the rib of Adam, but this is a woman. We are powerful, but our power has been like chip, you know, but we're coming back, and we've got to teach the young ones. Like the folks on this phone, we know it. We've got to teach the young ones and not beat them down. We got to understand where they are coming from. You know, not beat them down. Those are my points.
Well, one of the things I would like to add is that, you know, in reference to our women today, we have to look at the illusionary elements that are portrayed through the media. You know, you got stuff like the Atlanta Wives and the Basketball Wives, and now they got a new one called Sisters-in-Law, where these black women are doing so good financially and the inner field of, you know, a highly acclaimed field in the criminal justice division. But, you know, the negativity that the younger women look at when they look at these reality shows is outrageous. You know, I'm not even mentioning stuff like Empire, because, you know, that's out of circle. That's out of my circulation. I don't even deal with that. But I'm talking about shows that where you have prominent women, you know, that have made a so-called accomplishment, but yet these accomplishments take on a negative aspect. And
well, that is part of programming. That is simply a part of programming, and our conscious. With our conscious collectiveness, this we have got to get away from. We have got to get away from the television, which tells lies to our vision. And it is trying to divide us. And so it's just the step that we have to take. We don't even have to, I have no idea what what kind of reality shows are on right now, because I know why they're put on there in the first place, to disrupt our mentality, to bring us down to a lower level, lower vibrational level. It's all about vibration. So all of this that we see now is trying to bring our vibrations down. And we have just, for those who know, we just got to bring them in, you know, like shows like this.
I know, I understand that, but I wasn't finished with my comment. What I was going to say was that the negative energy that is producing, the negative energy that is being portrayed from these elements, it is those in the conscious community that have to get to the younger generation to try to change the mindset. And that was a job within itself. But what I was going to say was like this color barrier, the hair barrier of our women, you know. And I just had a conversation with a young brother the other day, and I don't know how this element evolved in the conversation, but he said, I can't deal with dark skinned women. See, and I told him, I said, well, why can't you? He said, I just don't like them. You know, and this is a brother with some light skin color to him. But I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to say what I told him. But anyway, it just goes to show that my grandmother taught me about this when I was a kid. And she said, don't be color struck. And that was an element that was used in our community years ago because of that brown bag test and all that foolishness. But these are negative elements of energy that once again are reverberating themselves in our community, especially dealing with black men and women. And you know, that should not, this is what I try to teach to the younger men. You know, if it's a black woman, I don't care if her hair is knotty, if she wears a natural hairdo, what I mean by natural hairdo, that she's just going natural, you know, and she's, you know, another thing is that our bone structure is not the same as white people.
Exactly.
Don't sit up there and just because a sister may have a few pounds over another sister, don't think that she's still not a woman. We have to get away from that. And I'm speaking as a man now. Because, you know, all women, the black woman is the most disrespected woman on this planet. She has been, and she still is, because there are so many elements that we have to fight. And the problem is that the black man, most of the black men today, are not helping our sisters deal with this negativity. We need to step up to the plate. Every woman that you see basically on this TV show that's dealing with these brothers, they got hair like, they got this Chinese hair, or somebody hair in their head. You know, and they're portraying these other elements that's not conducive to who we are as people. So, you know, we have to, the black man has to step up to the plate. That's the bottom line. We gotta be there for our women. These are our women. You know,
I think Delta wants to get in on this and share a comment. Delta, what say you? No, Delta, she's a Southern Belle. Ex-First Lady.
Mm.
Well, you know what? I was listening, and one thing I can say, ever since we've been doing this radio show, I love to listen to Brother Brown ever since I met him and ever since I've known him. The little short time I have known Brother Brown, I like him the way he build black women up. That's one thing I can say about Brother Brown. He have always tried to build black women up. I never heard him say nothing negative about a black woman. And I like that about Brother Brown so much. He is a person that don't put black women down. He's a person that always telling, on the radio, telling, oh, you got to treat your woman right. You got to talk to your woman right. Mm-hmm. You can't talk to your woman any kind of way. And we need more men like Brother Brown in our community, because And we need people like Brother Brown to go out and teach the younger men in our community. Because if a man don't know how to speak and talk to a woman, if he ain't seen what it is in a home, to how to be gentle and how to be kind and how to respect a woman, he don't know how to do it. And that's the problem we have. We have a lot of young black boys today haven't been trained because they don't know how. They don't know how to talk to a black woman.
Exactly. No one has set any kind of example. And the same with the young ladies. If they don't have any kind of example to go by, you know, they're just wild. I mean, I watched my mom. I watched how she fixed herself up. I watched how she didn't gossip with the other ladies, you know. I watched how she never went outside with some kind of little rag around her head and some beat up little house shoes, little fuzzy wuzzy house shoes. She always kept herself looking respectable and decent. And that's why I thought, okay, this is the mold. Okay, you know, I love her very much. She's very beautiful. I'm going to follow, you know, okay, put this cream on your face. You know, you look lovely, beautiful, and don't curse and, you know, stuff like that. But, I mean, these girls, they are following whatever it is that they see. And that's the norm for them. That's the norm.
And, you know, it's just like raising a child. When you raise a child in a home where there's no structure here, when that child goes out in the street, the same thing, the elements that they see at home, that's the same thing they're going to portray when they go outside the house. I was in Walmart one day.
Let's take a break right quick, and we'll be back, okay? And we have a caller, so we'll take our caller. So everybody just hold on, and you are listening to the Lotus Place radio station. Call in 641-715-3660. And if you'd like to share a comment, just press *61 and we'll get you right in. But right now, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. Right. Podcast and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Okay,
this just might be the most important list for the 21st century Afro-descent woman.
Don't they remind you of roots?
What up, African world? It's your boy, Home Team Man. I'm back at it with another video of African history, culture, and worldview. And today I want to talk about the top 10 queens in African history. To begin, this is not a popularity contest, so the standard of this list is not solely based on the queen's popularity, but many other factors like power, influence, and overall impact on African history. Let's begin. Coming in at number 10, we have Queen Nefertiti. Honestly, the only reason she made this list is because I pretty much couldn't ignore her. Her popularity has certainly stood the test of time, and that is greatness in and of itself. But she also passed my other specifications. Nefertiti's husband is pretty much known for ridding Egypt of all of its gods and advancing the idea of monotheism with the worship of the supreme god, Aten. Although he is largely credited with this, Queen Nefertiti played a large role in maintaining this idea in support of her husband. She was literally a part of one of the largest religious revolutions in Egyptian history, outside of the 25th dynasty Nubian kings. On top of that, she was well known for her beauty. Number 9, we have Queen Gudi. Now virtually no one knows about Queen Gudi, largely because Western scholars pretty much ignore her. But Gudi was a legendary Jewish queen that's known throughout African oral history. She's largely believed to have come from the Sodomo people of southern Ethiopia. Now, Gudi single-handedly destroyed the Akshumai Empire, located in northern Ethiopia. She burned down churches, she destroyed monuments, and she almost eliminated the entire royal family of Aksum. Even today in the Ethiopian countryside, Ethiopians speak of her reign as queen. She's widely known throughout Ethiopian oral history. But even the Arab scholar Ibn Hakel spoke about Queen Gudi. He states, and I quote, "The country of the Habasha has been ruled by a woman for many years now. She has killed the king of the Habasha, who was called Hadani. Until today, she rules with complete independence in her own country and the frontier areas of the country of the Hadana in the southern part of the Habasha. She's one of the few African queens that literally struck terror in the hearts of indigenous African people. Now that's power." Number 8, we have Queen Amina. Queen Amina was a legendary warrior queen of the Hausa people in northern Nigeria. The earliest account of Queen Amina.
So we'll pick back up on that one. Let me just speak my little Hausa that I do know, since he mentioned Amina was the queen of Hausa. Brother Brown, I will greet you in the Hausa language, which is spoken by about 20 million people over there in the Nigerian West African area. Baka dai, yai yai dai. That's a male greeting to you, Brother Brown. So how are you? Welcome back here to the Lotus Place. And let's take our caller. And Brother Brown, I want to hear your story, but our caller has been holding. And I think I know who this is, so welcome in.
This is Brother James from Spokane. Thank you for welcoming me, Black Rose. How you doing, Brother Brown and listeners?
I'm doing pretty good, brother. How you doing?
Hello. Namaste.
Thanking our ancestors for waking me up, you know, closing my right mind. The topic is our women. I want to give honor to my great-great-grandmother, who I never met. I met my great-grandmother on my mother's side. My grandmother and my mother, who is the most powerful person that is ever going to be for me, personally, the lady was my greatest teacher, the greatest mom you could ever ask for. And I never, her and my dad never ever argue. When they had sex, they went to a motel. My mother had me reading at a fifth grade level in the kindergarten. Children in elementary school in Philadelphia hated me because I could read so well. And, you know, it was amazing, just the love that I received. But what I learned later in life by one of my older cousins is he told me I was lucky. And I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Because you have a mother and a father." He said, "Your mother and father was in love when they had you." And I was like, "Huh?" And it took a long time for that to sink in to me spiritually. But I understand that now, because the topics that we're talking about, when we're talking about, you know, our young brothers, when I was younger, one of the things that I noticed is young brothers don't have the aspirations to marry sisters because they don't have nothing to offer. They think they don't have nothing to offer. So why am I going to ask a sister to marry me if I don't even have my own stuff together? When I was in Minnesota, I asked so many community leaders, pastors, you know, take me under your wing, teach me something so I could be able to be an asset to our culture as opposed to a liability. And not one brother offered to sit me down, teach me anything, train me, none of that. Hattie, last week, brought up Nellie Stone Johnson, which I just want to say I honor her too. The sister had a school named after her while she was living. That sister came to me and she took me under her wing, and my life has been, she must have been the great great grandmother on my father's side, because I never met none of my father's family. So again, I'm saying that to say, when we put all these pieces together, this is part of a genocide. Mm-hmm. This system don't want us to have families. They don't want black men and black women together, because when I was a child, 90-some percent of the homes had mothers and fathers. So when you look at these generations after that with the crack cocaine, and now these crack babies is grown now with, you know, the double crack babies is broken mess.
Exactly. I always say that when people say, you know, why are these children the way that they are? How can they go and kill somebody? How can they do this? How can they? These are some of these children are the residuals of crack babies or babies
that
raise themselves. I mean, children raising themselves. And some of their mamas are not on crack. That some of their moms and fathers are systematically in prison themselves, either by working three jobs or either working three jobs in the damn prison. So these poor babies, they're raising themselves, and God forbid they got to go over to grandmother's house like they did with Dorothy, Delta Cougar, and stay over there all day and work with grandmother so she can't even live her life.
That's right.
And so it's a crazy, sick, insidious cycle. And I remember the movie Claudine enabled me to really kind of see it. It took me, of course, like five times watching Claudine, you know, when I grew older and really watched it. And then I would hear stories that, you know, my grandmother would say about how you couldn't have nice things in your home when the social worker lady came around. Wait a minute, social worker? So you're supposed to be doing some social work, like helping socially. That don't sound like you're helping out a family socially. When I saw Claudine, how they used to have to hide the iron that he was finding garbage, you know, in the dumpster on his route. Remember James Earl Jones? Lamps and all of these throwaways that the rich people would throw away. Like now, you can't even dumpster dive anymore for food or different items because they lock it up. It's what kind of world do we live in where you're fine if you feed homeless people?
We live in a system that what you say can and will be used against you, you know?
That's
even in our own homes or in our relationships. You know, why is it that when we grow closer together, you take my life story to hurt me if I don't agree to stay with you? You know, did you ever really love me at all? You know, but I was going to say, I was doing some work with some brothers in Minnesota. We walked the streets and was talking to drug dealers and gang members. And the brothers, they were very polite and nice and said, brother, because, you know, we appreciate your words, your efforts, and everything. We love you. But let me just ask y'all something. And we all stopped talking, you know, because we took turns talking to the brothers and tell them how they poisoning our families and our community. The brother said, I tell you what, man, I give you every piece of dope I got in my pocket right now if one of y'all give me a job. Not one of us could say a word. All we could do is look at ourselves and each other in disgust because we couldn't bust a grape. You know, our heart was in the right place. But again, what are we going to do about it? Our children are asking for our attention. We're not giving it to them. They're listening to somebody else's story. My children, I got a 6, 8, and 10-year-old. And I was kind of smiling when you had the conversation last week about what y'all do for Easter. My children asked me and their mom, why we ain't getting no eggs and no candy? And we said, why? Because it's Easter. Okay, what's Easter? And if you can't explain that. So the bottom line, we had a conversation. We was on Google the whole day, you know. But the bottom line is if we don't start teaching our family the truth, instead of buying into doing what everybody else is doing just to be so-called normal, because I heard a brother teach that we could all get a crazy check. We've been lied to so long and mistreated so long. We can all get a crazy check. And he's a clinical psychologist by trade. And his name is Dr. Ray Higgins in St. Louis. deep brother.
Oh, I'm familiar with Dr. Ray Higgins. Okay, yeah, in St. Louis.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I took my mom and dad to the village. That brother, he changed my life 180 degrees. And I haven't sat still yet. I paid for that brother to come to Minnesota and speak. And the first people that got up and walked out was pastors. You know, they didn't want to hear it. You know, and let me get back to my focus, which is the sisters. First of all, I honor all the sisters that's on this phone and not on the phone. I really appreciate the topics and the information you guys are sharing is powerful. And
thank you for calling in.
Oh man, thank you for being there to call in too.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And so your people that you want to honor, you said your great grandmother.
Yes, my grandmother and my
grandmother.
Nellie Stone Johnson and Hattie mentioned another one, Sister Filet, and that's Empress Chi. She just went to United Nations, and that's the sister who did the Million Woman March. She just got back from United Nations charging America with genocide.
That's right.
On March the 21st, and I wanted to put that out there too. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, as a family, you know, when I was listening to Brother Brown, when, you know, the family unit has been, it's starting to be segregated based on this system. And we need to rejuvenate our family. We need to rejuvenate our kinship because we're stronger when we're together.
That's right.
We're much
stronger. Thank you, caller. And that's what I tell Mother Dunning. That's why it's okay for these children, Delta, for these young girls that like to procreate. Look, Delta, I have a story for you, Delta, about women. Are you there? Delta, one of your favorites, and Aja, Feather. Listen, so my cousin, Chessie, she's one of those. I mean, Chessie is like fertile. She is like super fertile. And so Mother Dunning, you would, oh my God, for you would just fall out over Chastity. But Chastity has three children, and just may have one coming. She's not married though, but she's a beautiful young girl, and I think that with the right young man in her life and the right women, like giving her some guidance, like you, Sister Delta, Feather, Mother Hattie. Oh my gosh. And even Brother Brown giving some of that male wisdom. She can be guided in the right direction. We need to invite her to the Women United Convention.
Oh,
young lady
hey,
like that, I would say.
That would be great.
Yes, indeed.
Because I'm going to tell you, I really appreciate that. I used to think, oh, why are they having all those babies? That was about 15 years ago. And then it came to me one day, this is about survival. And I began to think differently about that. I began to think like, hey, I only have one biological child. Therefore, they taking all my responsibility, because I tell you, that hurt. I don't want to do that no more.
Yeah, they're picking up our slack. The ones who just had one child, they're picking up our slack.
That's what I said. I said that's what I finally came to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess thank God it didn't come to me before I got my little boys. Then I discovered, oh well, I can just go and adopt me some children. And still help little children and help our black nation.
Absolutely.
And so that's the way I began to look at it. I don't feel nothing but love for them young ladies that's having a baby.
I know that's
right. I'm sorry. I really feel that way. And anything I could do to help any of them, I am willing to do it. And I don't want to see any children suffer. No, I don't.
What?
I don't want to see any children suffer. That's why I'm always willing. And let me tell you this, I do not believe just because they are poor that they are not going to grow up and be something. Pretty much everybody in America was poor, black and white at one time. You may be middle now, you may be upper now, but guess what? The wealthy class has always been in the 5% and under. So I don't know where everybody else thinks they were.
Exactly.
And right. So poor people have come out of all, poor people have grown up and done all kinds of great things in their lives. And so when
it
people,
sure
just because they're low income, it sure does. My dear friend used to say, and she had about, let's see, she has 6 children. She had been married once, but she used to say, just because I'm low income don't mean I'm a low life. Because I can tell you,
absolutely,
Donald Trump seems to be pretty low, and he has plenty of money.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
You can be a low life and wealthy, and just because you're poor or
low income.
Low
life and rich.
Right.
Like what Claire's mother told Frank on House of Cards, she said, even the White House couldn't buy you class. Oh my God!
Yeah.
House of Cards. That
yeah.
is my Netflix pick. Goodness. But in terms of women, also I want to honor another guest that I would like to invite to the Women United Convention taking place. What is it? 67th of this year in Minnesota.
August.
Is it the 6th and 7th?
Yes, August the 6th, which is a Saturday, and August the 7th, which is a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, we're getting ready to set it off.
Yes,
second annual
off.
Women United Annual Convention.
So my aunt, Dr. Debbie, is a mental health specialist. So she is going to start coming on, coming here to the Lotus Place and just sharing a little tidbit about mental health, since there's so many of our young people and older people too, just people period, having nervous breakdowns. And in some cities, unlike Memphis, Tennessee, I can say, you know, sometimes I rag my hometown, but one thing I can say about Memphis, Tennessee, if there's a mental crisis issue, a call made, the police are not the first on the scene. There are actual mental health specialists that come on the scene to talk to that person, not the darn police with guns. So, and some other cities have adopted this. I don't know off the top of my head, so forgive me. But Dr. Debbie is going to come on and start speaking a little tidbit on mental health. And Mother Hattie, I would love for you to meet my aunt, and
I would love for her
to come in and speak. Yes,
yes,
yes. I already mentioned it to her. She would be a love. She would love to. So
that would
be
awesome because yes, we have a void in that. We want to have a really healthy mental health person to come.
Yes.
So that sounds. Great. I was just thinking the same thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have to deal with that mental health piece.
Now let's talk about women and mental health. You know, now one thing that we're always expected to do is be the strong person and work through it and hold the family together and the superwoman. And I love that song. I can't think of the lady's name. I'm not your superwoman. Chevy, you know what I'm speaking about. I'm not your superwoman. And just trying to do everything. And sometimes I think we as, especially black women, because we're always taught as black people, period, you have to work twice as hard and be twice as smart and all of that. And I'm not telling my children that anymore. Not that I have children that I tell that to, but I'm not telling my children that because, listen, you are who you are. You are great and exceptional. The way that you are, just because you are you. You are a little mini God walking around, so you can do all things. And even if I want to take the Christian route on, you can do all things through Christ which strengthens you, like the Bible says, right, Delta? So I think that.
Yes. Beverly Prosser was the America's first black female psychologist. By the way, just FYI.
Ooh,
Beverly, Beverly, huh. What's the last name?
Prosser, I believe. P-R-O-S-S-E-R.
Okay.
75 years ago.
75 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remember her. So, any thoughts on black women and mental health? Like always having to maybe look a certain way, be a certain way, always be happy.
I think that it's a lot of pressure on black women to be a certain size, how they wear their hair. You know, that messes with your mind after a while. I mean even women wearing eyelashes, you know, all of a sudden it's just like, I mean, the worst thing. I mean, we're just criticized so much. Even the women who decide to go natural, I mean, they get critiqued by our own, you know, like, oh, she can't do that. Oh, no, she don't have a face for that. Everybody can't do that. You know, damn if you, yeah, like you don't. You know, you wear a wig, you can take that wig off.
I could not even believe the crazy, I couldn't believe the crazy woman that came out talking about beautiful, intelligent, gifted little Gabby. I said, what?
Oh my God.
That was,
yes.
To me, that was crazy. Them start talking about her hair when she done, what, how many gold medals
she's
did the girl? Three.
Flips up in the air.
They better be glad I wasn't around. I'd have probably been in jail on that one again.
Oh my goodness. It's like,
I'd have strangled that bitch. I'd have strangled that silly, ignorant woman who started
been
saying.
Brushing her teeth with too much fluoride.
She the one they ought to come track down and talk about. Because her mind is real bad. Here, this
that's
one little
saying.
Wonderful. Yeah.
That fluoride got to her. Oh my goodness. It's like, what level? Wow. Way down
really?
There. Way down there.
I think sometimes people, they do have issues when you're expressing yourself, because they remain in a prison and whatever is holding them back.
Yes, you said it. She's in prison. Her mind is locked up. Her mind, her brain is locked on lockdown, and she doesn't even know it. Whoever she was, it mentioned something about that 3-time gold medal champion's hair. She needs her head examined.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody got time for that when they flying through the air, you fool. You get your dumb, no athletic self up there. Let's see you fly through the air and keep your hair straight.
Straight. I can just see her fly through the air like, ooh, this
person
right here.
She up in the middle of a somersault with her mirror and her breath brushing. Now that is.
Look, and can you imagine when she lands, she'll reach back and, you know, turn that little bob in the back of her head, making sure it's, you know, looking straight.
Right, put that hand back in there. She looked real crazy.
Exactly.
And she sounded very mentally ill and crazy and low self-esteem.
Oh, my God. Low self-esteem. I'm telling you, loving yourself. If you can't love yourself, you can't love anybody else. She has no self-love.
No.
Why
and you know what?
That young girl.
Exactly. About some hair. That sister, 75 years ago, I think she started Beverly Prosser, PhD. She started in Houston. Isn't Prairie View there? Prairie View A&M?
Yes.
Prairie View A&M. That's where she got her bachelor's. That's where she got her bachelor's at, and then I think a PhD in Cincinnati, Ohio. But that was what her dissertation was in. Her dissertation was in, I think, self-esteem of women, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we really have to.
Self-esteem of women.
We really have to work on that. That's a prime issue right now with women of color. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Self-esteem. It has really been attacked.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, there was a study with the little white girls really had some trouble with their weight, and they were so sick and mentally ill, trying to stay really thin. Yeah. They were bulimic, anorexic. Okay. And the African American girls do not seem to have that serious of a problem with this weight situation that people will get into and talk about. The black girls felt they were sexy even though they were heavy.
Yeah, I do see that more.
The little white girls did not have that level. They were just, they're totally. They're even doing all kinds of what do you call this? Oh my goodness, the surgeries on their breast and surgeries when they're very young.
They're doing all of it.
The young girls.
Reconstructive surgery.
Yeah.
I read that some of the fathers are actually buying their 16-year-old daughter's breast augmentation surgery packages for their 16th birthday. The father.
Oh, God. I can believe it. That is so sad.
Yeah, that's common, like,
see,
in the elite, so-called elite world.
Yeah.
Now, can you believe that? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That is so sad.
Oh, that's very common, baby. That is very common. You better just.
Oh my gosh, that's the first I've heard of that.
Suicide. Oh, that's serious about that.
That's letting them know right off the bat. You are not good
adequate.
As you are. So
right.
Let daddy fix you.
Let daddy do some more than fixing you too after we get you this.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna let the black folks get off so easy. Because we do the same thing when we perm those children's hair. When we perm our little girl's hair at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That's right. It's the same kind of thing.
Yes.
And I know everybody. I know everybody loved Madam C.J. Walker, but she the one came out with that press and comb to start straightening up our hair and doing all that stuff around the hair to try to look like something that we weren't instead of going with the natural look. I know y'all like her, but I kind of fell off from her. I say, sorry, her money was gone, man.
I heard a different story about her. I can't really put it into words right now, but what I read was she gets a really bad rap on that. She was a businesswoman. She was thinking of different things that she could do to empower her business. But it's something about that straightened comb that isn't all that truth that we've been told. We got to realize where did it come from?
I guess she didn't invent it.
No, I did not say that. But I mean, what is the story behind it?
The story is you need your hair straight instead of kinky.
Who said that?
I don't know, but the straightening comb, from what I understand, was invented by Madam C.J. Walker. Did she or not?
Yes.
Is it a lie?
Yes.
I don't know. I just
said that yes, she did invent it. But what I'm saying is it the story that is that you what you heard? Is that the real story?
I haven't heard anything. I just know that she invented these hair products, and she invented the straightening comb, which allowed, and that's when people began thinking it was better to have your hair straight than kinky. I'm not talking about what she thought about it. Sure, she was a businesswoman. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to be a businesswoman. I'm saying how I felt later on as I began to look at
this situation around, you know, her being the first. She was the first woman, self-made millionaire. That's to be adored. But it's kind of like, right, even in, it's kind of like to, in today's society, if in effect you have something. Oh, y'all got to read this. Where is this thing at? Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
I'll find it before we finish tonight. But anyway, if you have something that's going to make you appear as though you are not adequate as it is, as you are, as God made you, as your parents made you, whatever you want to think, as your, then you can get some money. You can get it. You can get it. Because what that says is that you are inadequate the way we are, and we want you to look like us. The check, I don't know, I read this the other night, I think, but I got to read you this. Here you go. And it's the same thing with the money piece. This was that Meritorious Manumission Act of 1710, and it said people could get free from slavery if they did one of, if they did one of these four things. Number one, the slave who saved the life of a white person. Two, the slave who protected the property of a white person. Three, the slave who invented something from which a white person could make a profit. Four, the slave who informed, squealed, or snitched on his own people who plot any revolt or break free of slavery. And it's the same thing with the money game now. If you could do any of these four things, you can get some money. The system is wide open for you to get it. But would that system have allowed you to become a wealthy millionaire if you were doing something that would uplift your people other than with that economic or money situation that you yourself would have been getting? So say for instance, you wanted to help pull out 5,000-10,000 African American people out of poverty by doing something with them that where you were creative. You think it would have, you think it would have gone anywhere? And that's all I'm saying.
I do not believe that when Madam C.J. Walker invented the straightening comb, I kind of don't feel, I don't feel as if she was doing it to encourage people to look European. I believe that she was doing it so that the hair would be easier to handle, and a lot of other people took that and they ran with it in the way they wanted to run with it. I don't feel that she convinced anybody to say, you know, you need to get this so you can look like white people. You know, I don't think that that was her intention. I think that she started out, she had her own scalp disorders, and that's how she got into the business in the first place. And she just kept thinking of different things that she could do in that line of work that she was in. But
that's a good topic for us to research, like really have like some research on Madam C.J. Walker and her history and her story. I would like to know more because I just basically know that yes, she invented some products and the straightening comb, and it was for transforming the hair texture.
And see, that's all we've been told. It's much, much more to her than that. And she gets the rap as
the
beginning of her. I'm not saying that you know, but you did say in the beginning, I kind of hold that against her. You know.
I definitely do. And my point still being, it's not going anywhere in white America unless you are sacrificing something, or it doesn't uplift a masses of people. That's all I'm saying. That's my point here. So in other words, it would have been great if she had invented something that would make the hair easy to comb, but yet the hair stayed in its natural state. It didn't have to be straight like white people's hair straight.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what you're saying. So, Delta, you're back with us. What's up?
Yeah, my phone just keeps going out. It did it.
Mine does too.
Yours doing it too. It's just a drop of salt, and we'll have to call back in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We did it the last time we was on the show.
But no, I wanted to comment on two things. I agree with what Miss Hattie is saying too. If you invent a straightening comb, that means you want the hair straight. But then too, she wanted to make money too. But if you invented it, you was intending for somebody to press the hair out. But now me personally, I don't see no harm in pressing hair out. I don't see no harm in wearing weave, but that's what you, whatever it takes, this is the way I look at life. Whatever it takes to make you happy. Cause what it takes to make you happy, it may not take that to make me happy. So whatever it takes for you and you happy with it, that's you. So I don't see nothing wrong with it. Now that just
that's kind of what I was saying about the straightening of the hair. If she thought that it would be nice for you to just kind of straighten it out a little bit, that doesn't mean that she's going all the way over to trying to be straight like white people straight. It's just how we are as black women. We are very creative. We are constantly thinking of new and better and more alternative ways to doing things. And I'm not in that feeling of that, of she switched us over kind of thing. I'm just not thinking, because, I mean, look at so many people now. I mean, I just really don't think that that was the switch over to us, you know, trying to look white or European.
I don't feel that either. But do we have our letter too while we're talking? It's like 15 minutes. But either way, I will go back. I think whatever it takes to make you happy. Now, you take me personally. Me personally, I'm not talking about nobody else. Me personally, I like to wear weave. I love weave. I don't see nothing wrong with it. That's what makes me happy. So it may not take weave to make you happy. But what I'm saying, it ain't that I got that. Like, if I didn't have the weed, I would still be happy. But what I'm saying, if that's what I like to do, I don't see nothing wrong with it. If it makes me feel sexy, I don't see no harm in it. As long as I'm not hurting anybody, I don't see nothing wrong with it. Now, that's just me. Somebody may not like to wear wigs. Somebody may not like to wear tattoos. Somebody may not like to wear fake fingernails. I like to wear fake fingernails. I like to wear my real nails start growing long, so I don't wear them anymore. I like to wear fake eyelashes. I don't see nothing wrong with it. Whatever it takes for you that you like to do, I don't see nothing wrong with it. But just don't forget where you come from. That's the only thing I say. The problem is, a lot of people forget where they come from. And a lot of black folks may not never press their hair.
But that's the whole point. A lot of times, that's the whole point. You want to forget where you come from. That's why you want to do what you do. And that's why you want to look or change the way you are, because you want to forget about all that where you come from business.
Okay, but let me tell you this, Ms. Hattie. I mean, Eisenhower, you got some people hair so nappy. But if you get up.
Curly.
It's curly. How about
curly?
Kinky. I got kinky hair.
What I mean, like wearing it. Like, what I mean, like wearing it, like the afros and different stuff. You know, really like into it. But what I'm saying, they can put on that white persona, even though their hair may not even be straightened out. They still got that white persona. They portray it.
You got a point up right there. You got a point right there that has nothing to do with the hair.
You sure enough got you a point there. Because I done seen plenty of dreadlocks.
Yeah.
This is whitewashed as they can be.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep. All messed up.
That is correct. So that's what I'm saying. It's the individual person. It's the individual person. That's the way I look at it.
Yes.
And I'm talking about the masses of a movement. Let me give you one example. For instance, I just have a problem with when people invent something that ultimately is harmful. So let me give you this. You know the perm that people put on their hair and that they put on the little 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year old children's hair, 10 year old, like and you don't know, and you don't know any better, but those chemicals go into your bloodstream and they start to cause you a lot of health problems, such as going to have your menstrual cycle start when you're 8 years old. They are endocrine disruptors that are in those chemicals that get into those children's bloodstream. Same thing with black children, same thing with the little white children, those girls and all the cosmetic products that they use at a young age. It is health hazardous to you. Cancer-causing agents are in them. The formaldehyde, all of that. The cosmetic industry is very, very unhealthy. And so that's all I'm saying, and that's what I have problems with. It becomes a health risk for people. I saw a little girl tonight in the grocery store, and someone had put on her hair the extensions with the braids, and they were so fat and thick. And I can guarantee you what's going to happen to that little girl by the time in the next year or two, she's going to be bald-headed, and she's not going to be able to wear any of that kind of stuff because her hair is already gone around the sides and halfway back in the top of her head where they have been braiding her hair, like doing that to her. And it's so unfortunate, the kind of life she's going to have to live as a child now, being completely bald. And I know some children do get bald from, you know, chemotherapy and all kinds of treatment, but just because the parent didn't have enough savvy to know that that stuff is going to make your hair come out when you keep braiding it in there at such a young age. Because that's what
One thing that we have to take accountability for is knowing what we are buying, knowing what we are putting on our hair. And also when people invent things, like if I was to invent something and I had good intentions for it, and then somebody else came and made it into something bad and very harmful, then those were not my intentions. Those were not my intentions for this to be turned around into a very bad thing. The atom bomb was supposed to be a good thing, but they took it and they made it into something horrible that killed a lot of people. So it's not always the inventor. Sometimes it's the people who are using the invention in what way that they use it in, and it becomes harmful. Now, I'm not saying that the whoever invented the perm, they didn't know what they were inventing. I'm just saying, generally speaking.
Isn't it all about the money? It's just about, I'm doing this because I want to get rich. Well, no, I think
I don't think that everybody who invents something just, it's all about them getting rich, because one thing we don't know about Madam C.J. Walker is that she had a lot of good programs that she was doing for the black woman, and she wanted to educate the black woman, and her motto was like, cleanliness and something else, something, I mean, but all she gets credit for is inventing, you know, the hair comb. I mean, she did so
there we go. There we go again with the cleanliness. What do they always say about black people? They stink. Yep, you can get that one. But anyway, I mean, I think it was just, more often than not, I would say 90% of the time it's about the money. Even inventions of drugs that people come up with are healing factors. And certainly in this day and age, there's very little humanitarian, there's very little humane practices just coming out for the betterment of humanity in the kind of days that we're living in now. You had some back in the past, but I just don't see anything in the last 50 to 100 years being anything except about how to, it's about money. It's not about humanity.
how to survive through a system of capitalism. Because you need money to, in order to have clean water, because if the people in Flint lived in an affluent community where Governor Snyder is shuffling money from places like Detroit and Flint to other cities and counties, then you can have clean water. But since you don't have the money, then you just use the bottled water to do everything.
And also, and I like to say something about that, Black Rose, since you mentioned Flint. I also saw on the news tonight, on the worldwide news, Ellen DeGeneres gave a lot of money, and Justin Bieber's, I don't know if you know about this, to a lot of the black schools up there.
Well, actually, and she gave $40,000 to one black school, and it was Spain Elementary, and that was the school that had the, like the mushrooms on the wall, and CBS actually came in and had a special interview one of the teachers there. Her name is Lakia Wilson, and she shows the gym pool that's been empty for years, and they could produce Olympic swimmers if they would just fix the pool, but they will not do that for the black and brown children. See, Detroit has a lot of black Lebanese, and of course Mexican and Asian children. That's the population.
But also, yeah, but she did, they did give money to three schools, and I want you to look it up because they really did, because it was on the news tonight.
Well,
and what happened is they went to the school today, and that's why I was going to tell you, you just made me thought about it when you brought it up.
Thank you.
They went, they gave money to three schools, and it was a lot of money. And she gave it to three black schools, her and Justin Bieber's.
Mm-hmm.
What happened today, they went to the school and arrested all three of the black principals today because they have pocketed the money, and they got proof that they spent a lot of the money that was given and raised by Justin Bieber's and Ellen, and they arrested the three black principals today. So you need to pull that up on the thing.
Actually, I did read that article, and the principals that were arrested and indicted, they're actually under a separate part of the Detroit public school system, which is called the Educational Achievement.
Okay, I was wondering, was it over there where you were?
Yeah, I mean, it's there in Detroit, but that's the whole thing.
What I'm saying is that just like the black net, like we get money to come in to raise, to help the black community out, but yet we got some more black net coming in and stealing it from the kids.
Well, you know what? There are people like that, and it's unfortunate, and I hope that they are indicted and serve time for taking money that they should not have been taking. Because when you have teachers like those 20 in Atlanta, and they're charging them on the RICO Act, because they were forced to change test scores or accused of changing test scores, and they're forced to serve time.
Right.
This is crazy when you have things like this happening in the school system, when teachers are going to jail, and not just for having
it
is. Children.
Right, it is. Teachers going to jail. This is unbelievable.
Well, let me go ahead on and give just a little slice of Delta's letter so we can close out. So,
but let me just say this. But you can murder up as many black people as you want, men and women, and nothing happens. But you want to send the people to school for cheating tests.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Something's wrong with this picture.
Something's wrong. Oh, speaking of which, excuse me, Delta, because this is a...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Hot topic update that we have to give, especially Mother Icy Hot, you're there in Minneapolis. Can you give us the update on the Jamar Clark? Because apparently, of course, officers...
Well, we all knew what was going to happen with that. Everyone knew that they were going to not be in any kind of problem for the murder of the young man. And so today he had a press conference, the prosecutor did, and Mike Freeman said, of course, this is why it was fine for that to happen, because the young man went for their guns. And
you know, that's the cold word.
We all know it. Everyone knew it. But, of course, the community did challenge him, and the NAACP president.
Yeah, because they had one lady today going to say from your town today, Miss Hattie, said that they was going to burn the city down. And they said, and they showed that today on the world news. The young lady said, it's your fault when the city get burned down. And she said, it's going to burn down.
Huh.
Young black girl stood her ground up and said that on national TV today.
Oh, okay. So he said that was kind of basically it. There would be no charges. There would be no grand jury. There would be none of that. And of course, everyone knew, like they said, at the hearing, well, not the hearing, at the press conference today, we knew this is what you would do. We knew this is what you would say, irregardless of what evidence that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, these people can show their video. And by the way, all of that is up. All the video, they said, is up on the, Hennepin County Prosecutor's website today, right after the press conference. They released all of it, only they showed a few pieces of it. Mm. But, there were lies there. And one of the things that was, said was that the young man was told to get your hands off my gun several times, and
stop trying to take
his gun several times, and he did not do it. And then the police officer was yelling to the other police officer, shoot him. You didn't see any of that on the video that they showed today. And when he told him, I'm going to shoot you if you don't get your hand off of it. He said, the young man said to him, Jamar Clark said to him, I'm ready to die. Now, nobody had heard that other than the two officers. And so, you know, it's really surrounding all of this. You know, you get to investigate your own situation. And then 2-3 days later, the Department of Justice comes in and to take over the investigation. It was just terrible, because we know what, anytime you have a prosecutor in another state that says to someone that they shot themselves in the chest when they had their hands cuffed behind their back. And so you have all of these kinds of things that happen all over the place. So
yeah.
When it comes to us, but one of the things is, I believe it was like within a minute, like 61 seconds, they arrived on the scene and the man was dead. People said today, we know a lot of white guys, they spend 3 and 4 hours trying to talk them down.
Oh, certainly. Well, thank you, Mother Hattie, for giving us that update on Jamar Clark. And we are just about to close out. So any closing comments? Feather Light, closing comments? Delta?
I was done when they had the video of Eric Garner being choked and screaming for breath, and the little boy that was in the park with the rifle, and within 2 seconds he was dead. Nothing surprises me after that, and nothing should surprise us. And we should not be, you know, angry, upset, or anything, because this is the order of the day for them. And we just got to get ourselves together, because this is them. This is how they're going to be. It's not going to all of a sudden just, oh, we have done it. We've been so bad to them. We're just going to just repent and start treating them better. No. That's not going to happen. Nope.
and not going to have a come to Jesus moment.
So we have to press forward and make a change ourselves. And that's why I love
exactly
Michael Jackson's song, Man in the Mirror.
Yeah, I love that. Man,
so,
start with self.
Yes, yes, start with yourself. Change yourself. And so, oh my goodness, we are to the end of our show, and I didn't even get a chance to play a clip that I did want to play for us, but I want to uplift all of the beautiful, lovely mothers and queen mothers and sisters.
Well, you can do a slide for our first part of the show, can't you?
Can I do what?
Can't you play that clip, the first part of this Friday show?
I certainly can.
I'd love to hear. You come up with some of the best clips.
Oh,
she sure does.
You got
all of them.
Really?
You can tell
you
spent some time in researching those.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about sharing and loving and caring, and that's why I love all of you ladies so much. All of you are my advisors, and I thank you. Let me just say this. Feather purchased a Himalayan salt lamp for me. Himalayan rock salt lamp. Oh, my God. You can dim it. It's the best. It works on the negative ions, and I tell you, it absolutely works. It works. I feel like a new person. I am new. I am love. I am me. And we will be back here on, what's today? Wednesday. So we'll be back on Friday.
Oh.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Namaste.